It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today. I think it was Betty Davis who said, "Getting older isn't for sissies." As we age, things happen. There are things we need to live with. Today, my guest is Elizabeth Dragazzi. You've heard her on the show before. She's a pharmacist and a pharmacotherapist. So today we're discussing senior conditions that can keep you from being your best. So we've outlined a group of conditions that you may or may not be struggling with, or you may know someone who's struggling with, and we are going to try to fix it during the next half hour. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here again. You're one of my favorite experts, my go-to person. So let's jump right in. Let's talk about one of the things that I hear about, and I know people who suffer with this, restless leg syndrome. So how are you going to fix that?
Well,
and what is it exactly?
Restless leg syndrome, for those who have it, they know what it is. They get into bed and their legs feel jumpy. And especially people who are in high-stress jobs, they tend to get it earlier than most folks.
What is the typical age of getting restless leg syndrome? Is there
probably
a typical age?
Probably after age 60. But it's most common in folks who are, you know, in their late 70s or 80s. And there's a very good reason for that, because restless legs are the first symptom of Parkinson's disease. So we'd like to discuss first, before we get into that discussion, some of the other things that could confuse you about whether it's truly that or not.
So if somebody is suffering with restless leg syndrome, that would disrupt their sleep, but what can they do about it? Are there medications? Is there something, you're very into the natural way of doing things? What can they do to either have the restless leg problem subside, get rid of it altogether, or just bring it down a notch so that it's not as troublesome?
Yeah, the natural ways of dealing with it first are to do a good ritual routine of settling yourself down so that you get a good sleep. We had discussed in a previous radio show about the use of melatonin. Try using that to settle yourself down with a warm glass of milk. Has tryptophan in it, which will also further settle you down. And it has some nice B vitamins that work well to do that. If these initial measures do not work, then there's something deeper going on, and it's a good idea to go to the doctor and or the provider and discuss this with them.
If someone is having restless leg syndrome, is it partly because they're just too wound up? They can't, their body, even though they may feel like they're relaxed, their body isn't unwinding?
Yes, it for the most part, yes. One of the good things about going to the doctor is that he can look down your medication list, and even a pharmacist, if you want to ask a pharmacist to do this, you can look down the medication list and see if there is an offender in that list, and get that traded out for something that won't be as likely to do that. They do have some screening tests for Parkinson's disease, and there are very mild medications that can be prescribed to help with that, and they usually do help quite well.
And we don't want to panic anybody. If you have restless leg, it does not necessarily mean that you are developing Parkinson's.
No.
But it's being forewarned or knowing in advance, because you can start a treatment so much sooner if you do get a diagnosis for anything.
Yes.
Really. Early diagnosis is always better.
Yes. And not only that, it's really a red flag for toning down your stress factors in life. Sit down and figure out where they're coming from. And chances are, if you're able to reduce those levels of stress, you're going to find that improve. There are quite a number of medications that can be prescribed that aren't, if Parkinson's disease is not the offender, but it still persists, there are quite a number of other prescription medications that can settle that down nicely.
Okay, so let's Let's move on to leg cramps. Now, these can be paralyzing, take you right out of bed in the middle of the night, but they're not the same as restless leg syndrome.
That's right. It's commonly nicknamed as Charlie horses. And as soon as I hear that description from someone, my ears perk up. And I ask, my first question is, what are they taking in their medication list that can cause this? I'm a pharmacist. You have to forgive me.
Always go right to
yeah.
the meds.
Yeah. And a very common family of medications that can do this. The family is called proton pump inhibitors, but the family members are things like Prilosec, Prevacid, Nexium, Protonix. They end with an azole, pantoprazole, and that's how I recognize them right off from their generic name. And these medications prevent you, full stop, from absorbing magnesium. When whatever magnesium you get in your food, it's not easily absorbed in the first place. But when you take these medications, it just blocks that. So people are predisposed to getting these Charlie horses at night. And very often, if I'm able to talk with the provider about getting those switched out to Zantac or Pepcid, Zantac and Pepcid do not do this. So that's one thing that can be done. And if it's not possible, if there's a stomach condition that does not allow that change to occur, taking an Epsom salts bath, a full bath or a foot bath, it doesn't matter. As long as there's hair and there's sweat glands that the bath comes in contact with, sweat glands under the arms, sweat glands on the feet, and then, of course, anywhere hairy on the body, that is where magnesium is best absorbed. So I've encouraged many people who are unable to go off those other medications that we discussed earlier. I encourage them to take Epsom salts baths.
My mother swore by that when I was a child. She was always taking Epsom salt baths. What does the Epsom salts do for you? If you stick your feet in a bucket of water with Epsom salts, and how long should you soak and how much should you use, what does it do for you?
Epsom salts are a good source of magnesium, and it is better absorbed through the skin under normal circumstances than if you ate it. So the only exception is if you have psoriasis, and you need to be treated for a psoriasis first to thin the skin before that will be useful. But for any average person, if you use 1.5 cups of Epsom salts in a full bath of water 3 times a week, you will kiss your Charlie horses goodbye.
Really?
Yes. And for foot baths, it is 3/4 cup in a bucket of water. You sit your feet in for 30 minutes. And do that 5 nights a week or 5 days a week, whatever the case may be, and it will do pretty much the same.
If someone has neuropathy, would you still recommend Epsom salts?
Absolutely, because magnesium is very helpful for neuropathy. Magnesium as a salt, we underestimate its value a lot. In fact, even in the testing in the doctor's office, they have to do a specific test for magnesium because it is underestimated, but it is well known to promote good bone health. It strengthens our bone along with the calcium, and it's good for nerve health, and it's good for heart health.
And how would you get magnesium if you didn't or couldn't soak your feet that often or take an Epsom salts bath? A lot of seniors in senior housing don't even have a tub, and
yes.
It could be dangerous
yes.
for people to try.
Yes.
How else, maybe aside from a supplement, or maybe they could take a supplement, what foods could they take?
The best sources of magnesium in food are bananas, avocados, green peas. Again, chicken breast has, most of your meats have a good source of magnesium, meats and fish. So those are good to have if you want a good source of magnesium. Now, for the supplement, I would caution that not every magnesium supplement will do a good job of that. Magnesium chloride is the best absorbed out of all of the supplements. if you take magnesium oxide, you'll tend to get diarrhea earlier, and it's not so much as absorbed. But magnesium chloride is your best source of supplement if you want it absorbed.
And it seems like magnesium, because it isn't so well absorbed, you had said, is, to me, sounds a little like potassium. You really need it, but it's hard to get because you need so much of it. What is it, 6,700 milligrams or something? And banana has maybe a tenth of that. So you'd have to eat a lot to get enough potassium. How do you address that?
Well, actually, you can get potassium in quite a number of different foods, especially the meats. Orange juice has a lot of potassium in it. Bananas. In fact, when people are on water pills, the pharmacist is usually counseling you or has a little sticker on the side to say to take one banana or a full glass of orange juice every day when you're taking that.
And that would be really enough to help up, because it feels daunting that they need so much of it, and it's just, there's a lot in food, but not to the level that's recommended.
Yes.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll talk more about the conditions that you may have, and we will try to solve them to keep you at your best. And we're back with Senior Talk, discussing senior conditions that keep you from being your best with Elizabeth Dragazzi. If you want to know more about her and what she does, you can log on to her website, www.dragazzi.com, and you can get more of this information. So we discussed restless leg syndrome and leg cramps, which if you haven't had one, you don't even know from pain, because that will take you to your knees. Magnesium is a great way to, and Epsom salts, a great way to help resolve or at least lessen those effects. Talk to your doctor about any meds you're taking that could be contributing to those symptoms.
Yes.
Let's discuss another one that people have, sleep apnea. What is it? How do you know if you even have it if you're sleeping and you have an attack, unless you're waking up gasping? Can you have an attack of sleep apnea and not even know it because you're sleeping? Let's discuss that, and what are things that people can do to lessen sleep apnea?
Sleep apnea is a real strong contributor to depression, weight gain, high blood pressure, metabolic syndrome, which can develop into diabetes. So this is one of those prime drivers that you want to rule out. And a lot of people have that. You don't know whether it's the cart or the horse you're dealing with, especially if there is a gain of weight. If a person is overweight, chances are they have sleep apnea. And the way to know about it is to ask anyone who sleeps near them if they can hear a snore and whether the breathing is irregular. The pattern is usually they start to breathe fast and slow, and when they go on the slow part, then they sometimes even stop, and then they wake up with a snort. They're actually passing out and then waking themselves up, and that can be very, very harmful for one's health on many, many levels. So it's really important to be aware of this and to get it treated. And it is The way it's treated, the usual way it's treated, is to have a sleep study to find out whether this is really happening or not. And then they fit you up with what they call a CPAP machine. And it seems very scary at the time to have to wear this mask at night when to go to sleep. But quite frankly, if this condition is left to its natural end, it usually means that you come to an unnatural end much earlier. This is a life-threatening condition, and I cannot emphasize enough for people to get this followed up if it is suspected. The other type, there's actually two types. That is the most common type. Then there's a very rare type where a person could be driving or doing any kind of activity, and all of a sudden they'll stop breathing. And this is called central sleep apnea, and it is deadly. if it's not detected. And usually the doctor can tell from blood tests whether this is going on. So that's why it's important to have your annual physical and to get those blood tests done. And if there's any kind of reporting of being tempted to go to sleep, especially when you're driving, you should report that to the doctor so that he can screen you for this type of sleep apnea. We're not here in the business of trying to scare people, but this is a very serious condition and it should be followed up.
So this isn't one of those conditions where you can maybe take some magnesium or melatonin and really help. You need to see a doctor.
You do need to see a doctor for this.
And how do you know, aside from waking up with a start, are there symptom tiredness during the day or feeling weird like you didn't sleep even though you think you did?
Absolutely. You are tired, cranky, a hallmark symptom to watch out for is if a person goes to sleep during a social situation. They'll sit down on the couch and people are talking and all at once the eyes will roll up and they go off to sleep. That means that they're just so overtired from not having had an effective sleep the night before that they just can't keep up. And sometimes this even translates into violence where the person is so irritable that they can punch through a wall or a window. And depression usually is, and inflammation all over the place is a hallmark of this condition gone out of control.
So if you suspect or someone that sleeps near you suspects you have sleep apnea, get to your doctor.
Absolutely.
There's not, a pill isn't going to fix this one.
A pill is not going to fix this.
All right. Thyroid conditions are one, little known. People don't take it seriously. This little butterfly gland that pretty much regulates, I think, everything in your body. But thyroid, little thyroid condition here and there, that can be serious too if undetected. Is that right? And there are two types. Explain that.
There are the most common type is where your thyroid gets tired. Having a tired thyroid is a disease of stress. And actually, the thyroid hormone being prescribed is in the top 10 drugs prescribed in the world. So it is a very common thing that probably all of us at some point or another are going to arrive at the doorstep of having too little thyroid hormone being produced. And when that happens, you feel sleepy, your cholesterol goes up and your weight goes up, and it actually contributes to heart disease if it's not treated in time. So and the other thing that is a hallmark of having this condition is that you feel cold. You feel cold easily, even under unusual circumstances. So that's something that will probably need attention at some point or another in your lifetime.
When we come back, we will talk more about thyroid conditions. I do have more questions. And then some other conditions that afflict seniors. So stay with us. There's much more to come with Elizabeth Dragazzi. Stay with us. Hi, we're back discussing thyroid conditions. So are there more symptoms aside from being cold for hypothyroidism, the underactive thyroid?
Yes. Basically, all of your body functions are slowed down and inefficient. And that means that your hair doesn't grow as well, and especially along the eyebrows. If you lose your eyebrows, then that's really indicative that something like that is going on. You tend to run a lower body temperature, instead of 37, it's 36, or in the Fahrenheit, instead of 98.6, you're running about 97. And generally you are running inefficiently when you have that.
And the other side of the coin is overactive thyroid.
Yes. And this is not nearly as frequent, but if you are wound up and just cannot stop, it is, in fact, the person almost feels like they're jumping out of their skin when it gets really bad. This warrants a trip to the doctor, and your eyes bulge out too. This And it can be, it just can be from an overactive thyroid, and it's not anything serious. But if it is a cancer growth that is driving that, then it needs further follow-up. And the outcomes of getting that treated are very, very good. Even if it is cancer or if it's not cancer, the outcomes are very, very good.
So don't ignore these symptoms if you
do
have
not
them.
Ignore them. They can really be very damaging if you let them go.
And should you assume that when you have your yearly blood work done that a thyroid panel is being done, or should you ask for that?
It usually is done, but as a senior, to advocate for yourself, it doesn't hurt to just say, did you do my thyroid panel?
Okay. One of the other things that seniors struggle with is incontinence.
Yes.
And we see products, it's a multi-billion dollar market now with all the products that can help people live with that. Is there anything you can do that can treat it, prevent it naturally?
It's important to know how much water to drink a day and when to time it. If you have no problems, 8 glasses of fluid a day is recommended. And the better you do that, it's actually not a good idea to cut back on your water, especially when you are running into continence problems. You should keep up your fluid. And if it's a concern about nighttime, just tend to time your fluids in the earlier part of the day, and then you can then having to go to the washroom during the night is not as much a problem. But keep those fluids up to keep your bladder trained as best as possible. Now, with women, they tend to run out of estrogen as they age, and so that it's easier to leak when they laugh or cough. And I think those of us who are that age or older have experience with that. And you can, if your health is relatively good, you can talk to your provider about having a safe type of estrogen supplement, like a cream that can be applied in the vaginal area, and that can stave off some of those symptoms. If it is more pronounced, though, there are other things that can be prescribed that will be very helpful.
There are exercises, right, that can help strengthen the bladder wall?
Yes, there are exercises, and the provider will be very familiar with those exercises.
Yeah. Okay. And one of the things that I've noticed as I've aged is just this overall stiffness, especially in the morning. You just wake up so stiff, almost like you're made of wood, and it takes a while. And I don't remember that happening 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So how do we combat? Is it just getting enough exercise, or is there a drug that you can take, a natural drug?
Well, morning stiffness, it can be as a result of not having enough healthy movement. It's important to have a variety of smooth and rhythmic types of movements during the day. But if this is happening, like kind of all of a sudden, you need to report that to your physician, because it could be a more serious condition.
So if it may be age-related, may not.
It may not. Yes.
So log on to www.degrazzi.com and get more information about all of the things that she's talked about. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk.